Welcome, everybody. This is Rochelle, the Right Now Coach, and you're at the Right Now Mastermind class for June 2013. Our guests, I'm so excited, our guests are here to talk to us about From Premise to Publish, how you get a book from your idea to something that can make you some money or notoriety or something online or in print. So, a few things about the call. If you're not speaking and want to mute yourself, you can do that by pushing *6. We'll have a chance to answer questions or ask your questions at the end. And if you'd like to do that, you can unmute yourself by pushing *7. I've also started a little comment section on my Right Now Coach page on Facebook. So if you're not a talker and want to ask questions there, I have a note, so go to facebook.com/rightnowcoach and you can enter your questions there. So once again, I'm delighted to welcome Jocelyn Kaler, Amanda Valentine, and Nicholas Tulak for today's Right Now Mastermind class From Premise to Published. I would like to break with tradition, and instead of kind of telling you about them, I want to have them tell you about themselves. So Jocelyn is a writer. Jocelyn, can you fill in the details for us?
Yes. I am now a full-time writer. That has only been true for about a year. Before that, I have been a librarian. I've been a freelance editor for academics. I've worked a number of retail jobs and have taken a lot of classes and gotten a lot of degrees that haven't really panned out. So when I got the opportunity to try out writing full-time, I seized it, and it's been working out pretty well.
Great. And Amanda is her editor. Amanda, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. I have a degree in English and anthropology and a master's degree in education. I have taught 7th, 8th, and 10th grade English, and also 10 years teaching writing at Penn State. I've been editing role-playing games for about 10 years, and in the past two, I decided to become a full-time freelance editor, and I've started getting into fiction. I've done some editing for Chuck Wendig. I'm currently working on a novel for Carrie Harris, and I've been doing a lot of stuff with Jocelyn.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Nick is the publisher slash marketer slash bookkeeper slash whatnot. And Nick, why don't you tell us about yourself?
So my background is actually fairly diverse. I have an undergraduate degree in computer science and a master's degree in urban planning, and I'm currently working toward a PhD in urban planning as well. However, as a hobby, I decided to take up this book publishing thing, and I've been working on that with Jocelyn for the better part of a year now, and I basically do everything I do allow Jocelyn to have the time to write. So I take on the marketing duties, all of the technology stuff, all of the business side, finance, all that kind of stuff. And basically, like I said, try to give her as much focus on writing as possible.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. This is exciting to have all three of you with us today. Jocelyn, I want to start with you. And one of the things we talked about is that we're going to follow a book from kind of conception to publication. So one of the things we talked about prior to the call is that we want to talk about a specific book. So what book are we talking about?
Today, I think we will mostly be talking about my most recent collection of fairy tale retellings, which is a book titled End to End. And we will talk about that from its first idea in my brain to actually getting published. However, when we have some information about a few other books that I've been doing, we'll probably throw in some of that too. We've sort of been learning as we've been going, so not all the lessons were learned on one book.
Great. Well, okay, so let's just start with the question that we're all wondering. You know, there's this like kind of push-pull inside every author. Do I go independently or do I seek an agent and traditional publishing? You decided to publish independently. Can you talk a little bit about why you made that decision?
Yes. Like a lot of writers, I did initially try to find an agent and a publisher for various titles that I had written. This is starting over 10 years ago, and I never really got anywhere with it. As any writer knows, it can be a very disheartening process, and it was actually inhibiting my will to write. So I stopped doing that and just sort of focused on writing for quite a while. But what changed is that a few years ago, independent publishing became a much more viable option. With the rise of Amazon and Kindle and a lot of indie authors coming out of the woodwork, starting with Amanda Hocking, more recently Hugh Howey. And it just became clear that this was a path that was more of an option now than it had been previously. So I decided to go ahead with this path, always knowing that it might not be one that I stay on forever.
Okay, and so and that kind of leads to my next question. So now that you've gone indie and had some success in indie publishing and have enjoyed the process, would you ever go back to traditional publishing?
Well, it's something that I would always consider because I think it's not a good idea to just shut out an option for the sake of it. That said, I've had a few interactions with a more traditional model and haven't seen anything yet that would be worth it for me to give up the sort of control that indie publishing offers.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the core of it. It is true that there are some other benefits with money, which we can talk about later, but really control is a big issue. I decide what the stories are going to be. I have a lot of say in the design and the marketing and a lot of say in how we promote it. And that's really, really important to me. So that's, for the moment, my primary consideration, and I think that independent publishing is probably the best bet. That said, never say no.
Okay. Well, I'm curious about your writing process and what it looks like and how it's changed since you started publishing your work.
Sure. I think the biggest change is that having a sort of guaranteed end date, knowing that what I write will be published because I will be the one publishing it, has really sharpened my focus. There's a very concrete goal that I can work towards, and that's helped a lot. So on a daily level, I try to write about 2,000 words a day on my current work in progress. I don't always make it, but I always try to write something. And that can take me anywhere from a couple of hours to most of the day. It really depends. And if I have time and attention after that, I will devote it to editing another work or doing reading or research.
That's great. And then, well, I think we'll talk about the steps a little bit and like how that kind of looks over the course of the time. So how do you decide on writing project deadlines? You know, how do you say, okay, it's going to be 2 months or 6 months? What kind of decision-making goes into those details?
Sure. One of the things that works best is sort of working backwards from your hoped-for publication date. And before you can do that, you do need to have a good idea of how quickly you work and what your process is, and that varies for every writer. Having done this for about a year, I have a pretty good sense of what I can accomplish in, say, a few weeks or a month, and I can extrapolate out from there. So, for example, I knew that we wanted to have end-to-end out this spring, and that really meant that I had to have most of the stories written by the end of 2012, actually, knowing that they would be going through the beta reading process and going to the editor and getting turned around a lot as we did changes and proofreading and making sure everything was right. So there's always a bit more lead time than you'd think, and it's important to build that in.
Okay, so I think this is a time where it would be helpful for me, at least, to kind of get a sense of what are the steps a single piece goes through. So like from kind of starting with your conception of end-to-end as a book to kind of when you hand it off to Amanda, what are the steps that you put it through?
Sure.
And then, and just like about how long does each take, just so we can start to, you know, kind of construct our own timelines.
Yeah, absolutely. The first step is what I call a zero draft. That's my first goal. And with end-to-end, it's four interconnected stories of varying lengths. And they're all fairy tale retellings. That's something that I really enjoy and think about a lot. So the ideas were there, and they came relatively quickly. Writing the initial draft took, for some stories, it happened quite quickly. I would say the shortest story, which is 2,000 words, only took a week from start to finish for the zero draft, which is pretty fast for me. The longest story, which is 20,000 words, took a lot longer, partly because I was having structural issues with the story. So that one took actually about 3 or 4 months from start to finish. So it can vary dramatically. So sorry, there's no easy answer, I guess. But once I get a zero draft, which is what I define as a draft that I'm willing to let another human being read, then I start sending it to beta readers, get their feedback, write again, and then after that draft is when I send it to Amanda for the first time.
Mm. Wow. And so how long does it take you to revise it enough for beta readers, and then how long to revise it enough for Amanda?
If I have nothing else going on, I would say it can take anywhere from a couple of days to a week. And keep in mind that I can be a full-time writer, so I can really devote my days to this. If you have a full-time job or other commitments, obviously you have to block that time in. I would say that I can edit about 10 to 20 pages per day and have it be a quality edit. Again, okay. That could change depending on the writer.
Okay. And you talked a little bit about beta readers. What do they do, and how does that differ from editors?
Sure. A beta reader is not someone that you pay, usually. They're usually friends, readers, maybe someone from a writing group, could be a critique group. It can really vary. Basically, it's someone who has an interest in your work. They're enthusiastic about what you're doing, but they also have expertise in your genre. They're not just going to tell you that you're great, which is a really important thing to hear, but it's not the only thing you need to hear. So a beta reader is sort of an interested friend with a critical eye who will tell you what they think honestly, and that's really, really important. I try to have about 5 beta readers per story. Sometimes I get more, sometimes I get only a couple, but I think having 5 objective pairs of eyes is really important. And beta readers don't do, like, line editing or proofreading. They're really looking for story ideas, which is very different from what Amanda looks at when she gets it.
Okay. And I guess, I mean, I think it would be really hard to find beta readers. Most critique groups only want to read like 2,000 words. What have you done to find beta readers? And do you pay them or offer them free books or coffee or what? How does this work?
It varies. It is extremely difficult to find good, reliable beta readers. So when I find them, I usually shackle them to a concrete wall somewhere and feed them regularly. I don't pay them. I've been really fortunate to sort of get a small group of people who I can consistently ask. I don't want to fatigue anyone by asking them too many times. So I try to balance that out. But it's it is a process, and sometimes there are people who say they want to do it and they just can't commit to it time-wise. That's fine. You just have to move on and accept that it really does take time to develop those relationships, as it does with readers. So
okay,
it's something you just have to work at.
And just, you know, before we move on to Amanda, just a final question. What do you do as a full-time writer to kind of fill your well and keep the ideas coming? Because it's, you know, it's hard to write every day. How do you keep yourself energized for it?
It is hard to write every day. It sounds like such a first-world problem. Oh, I have to write every day. But it's true. It can be really hard to stay motivated. Fortunately, getting paid for your writing is a huge motivator. So having that knowledge in mind that when I get this project done, it's something that will be for sale, that people will buy, is a real incentive. And on a more creative level, I try to keep reading. I read other books both in and outside of my genres, and just try to stay open to new ideas. I'm always jotting notes down and hoping to incorporate them later. One story I just wrote was from an idea I wrote down 10 years ago, and it's just sitting there. And it finally clicked and worked, and I wrote that story in about 2 weeks.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it varies, but it's been worth it, and so far I've been excited enough that I can keep writing.
Oh, that's great. Well, I want to talk a little bit with Amanda. This is where you're going to come in. After the beta readers have looked at it and Jocelyn's done all of her revisions, she sends it to you. So I guess my question is, after Jocelyn's done all these revisions, after she's had beta readers read it, which is basically what most of us do when we go through critique groups, why not take the book right to publication or send it right to agents? Why go to an editor? What do you offer that's different?
Such a hard question to, you know, justify my existence. I think that a lot of what I offer is that I have a lot of experience with words, both as a writing instructor, as a reader. And so my goal is to try to take the strong story that Jocelyn has handed me and make it really amazing. So I'm looking at it word by word. I'm looking for inconsistencies that are throughout the story. My eye is really, really critical and detailed in a way that a beta reader doesn't need to be. They're looking more at the plot, and I'm looking at all the tiny little details that go into telling that story.
Okay. So can you talk a little bit about the different kinds of editors there are? Because it sounds like you're talking about a few different types of editing, copy editing and development editing and so forth. So can you give us a sense of just the breakdown of what those editors are and what they're called and what they do?
You'll find different definitions and labels and so on. So the one that I'm giving you is just sort of how I've broken it down.
Okay.
But developmental editing is what I do with Jocelyn, which is I'm looking at the whole story. I'm looking at how everything fits together. I'm looking for inconsistencies across the plot, places where things don't seem quite clear enough. It's more than just the words and how she's saying things. It's how the entire story is being told. And that's going to involve several back and forths, typically. But it's a fairly involved and detailed thing. I find myself doing some research to see, you know, what I can find when I have a question and so on. So it's a pretty involved editing. Copy editing or line editing tends to be primarily text, how things are said. Not just looking for errors, that would be proofreading, but looking at how things are said, whether or not there are extraneous words that the reader might get lost in, whether something isn't clear enough, whether there's too much repetition in how sentences are structured. That kind of thing falls into copy editing. And then proofreading is the last thing, which is just looking for the errors.
Great. And you mentioned before consistency, and that would be part of the copy editing, Is that correct? The kind of making sure that the blue eyes don't turn green like halfway through the book, and
major ones, absolutely.
Yeah.
Things that really stand out, a copy editor should be finding consistency wise. I try to go more in depth, especially in developmental editing.
Mm.
And like, did you actually set up this scene well enough early in the book, and things
okay.
like that.
Oh, that's, yeah, exceptional. So I you know, I hear all these horror stories about working with editors, which is hard because I'm an editor too, so I'm hoping that people aren't out there telling horror stories of me. And I think, you know, people worry that editors are going to change their work too much, or they talk about, well, they had to fight an editor, fight with an editor about keeping words or titles or whatever. So, I think it's helpful just to learn how to work with an editor, especially one that you're paying yourself. Do you have any tips for us as we learn to work with editors?
Well, I think that that's important to look at. There are two very different kinds of editors. When you're working with a traditional publisher, the relationship is different.
Okay.
When you're publishing for yourself, you've hired that editor on as a partner. And you can't necessarily guarantee that in traditional publishing. I can't really speak to traditional publishing because I haven't experienced it. But as a freelance editor, if you don't like what I'm doing with your work, you can fire me. It's not
right.
going to change anything.
Right.
You know, you'll still be able to publish your book. It's not going to disrupt your relationship with your publisher because you're your publisher. And so when you have a freelance editor working with you, it's very much a partnership. It's very much a conversation. And, you know, if Jocelyn doesn't like what I'm saying, how I'm suggesting she change her work, she doesn't have to do it. She has the final say on this. But as she has mentioned in the past, that's also a good sign that there's something she needs to look at. She may not
yeah.
want to change it the way I am, but that may say, oh, this isn't coming away across the way that I mean it to. And so it's sort of a red flag for her to look at a scene. It's always fascinating to see the document after she's revised it again after I've edited it, kind of like, oh, wow, we didn't even talk about this, and this new scene is fantastic, which
wow.
I hope came from the conversations we were having.
Wow. And kind of how does that process work? I mean, does she send it to you and you just edit it and then send it back, or are there back and forth? What does that look like?
She sends it to me. I read through it and use text markup. I work in Microsoft Word because
okay.
it's the easiest for text markup and comments. So I have track changes on while I'm going through so she can see anything that I changed, and I put in lots and lots of comments. If I have a question about something, I put it in there. If I think something should be stated differently, I'll make it as a suggestion instead of actually changing it in the text unless it's a fairly minor change. Then it goes back to her, and she goes through it and sees what she wants to change, and then it comes back to me again. And I'll look over. At that point, it kind of depends on the state of it. Sometimes I'll do an entire read-through again. Sometimes I'll just look at the parts that she changed. And then, ideally, I look at it again once it's been laid out.
After Nick has laid it out into final form, you look at it again just to make sure it's kind of all working well.
Right. At that point, it's a pure proofread.
Okay. And I guess, you know, I think it's very hard to trust our work to other people, so it's important to find an editor that we like to work with. Do you have any suggestions about how to find a good editor and what kinds of, I don't know, background, experience, relational skills that we need to be looking for?
I think it's really important to talk with somebody for a while before you start editing with them.
Okay.
To get a sense of how you communicate with each other, because editing should be a conversation. It should
okay.
not be one-sided. It should not be a lecture. It should very much be a conversation. And so you have to be able to communicate with each other well and happily.
Okay.
It's also a good idea to send, you know, a couple of pages to an editor and see what they do with it.
Okay.
See if they're doing the kinds of edits and so on that you feel is making your work stronger.
Mm.
Most editors are willing to do that. Some may charge for it, but it's mostly just to not be handing out free editing and to protect themselves.
Mm.
But it usually doesn't cost a whole lot. You know, because it's just a few hundred words generally.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, because then you have a real good sense of how the other person's going to relate to your work. Mm-hmm. So Amanda, what are the kind of ballparks that we should look for in terms of paying? And I think I want to think about this in three different stages. One, development editing, two, copy editing, and then three, proofreading. Because I think all are important steps. And it sounds like you get to do all three for Jocelyn. But let's talk about each separately. What do fees look like?
They are staggeringly different depending on who you're talking to. I'm coming from the world of role-playing game editing, which is hideously underpaid.
Okay.
And so I'm kind of used to that. My rates tend to be much lower than my peers. I work on a pretty simple 1, 2, 3 per word.
1 cent, 2 cent, 3 cent?
Uh-huh. And generally, developmental editing includes the proofreading and the copy editing and all that stuff.
So 3 cents would be for development editing.
Right, which would include the other two.
Okay.
Most editors are going to end up being more than that, but they are also often willing to negotiate, because by the time you're looking at, you know, 50,000 word novel or something, that adds up really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, and I, you know, as I've worked both as an editor and as a writer who hires editor, I like the per word rate a lot better, because it's an agreed upon amount before you get in, as opposed to a per hour amount, which is challenging. And you know, how do I charge for the fact that I'm thinking about your book when I'm running in the morning? You know,
exactly.
It's ridiculous.
How do I remember to stop the clock when I'm, you know, getting a sandwich for my kids?
Exactly. Yes. Boy, I know exactly what that life is like, Amanda. So kind of as we wrap up your section, and I know we're going to come back to you with questions, but is there any piece of wisdom or advice that you'd offer that I've missed in my questions or that I haven't been able to get to yet?
I think the biggest one is really you should not be intimidated by your editor. You should have a relationship that feels like a peer relationship, where the two of you are working together to make the book the best that it can be, where both of you are positive, you're not in true conflict with each other. Not to say you'll always agree, but you should always be working together towards an agreed upon end goal of the book being as good as it possibly can be. And in the end, that's the author's call to make. It's not the editor's book. And what they say, I'm not a teacher, you know, I'm not marking your book up in red and you have to make those because you're wrong. These are just suggestions and things that came to me, and it's up to the author then to make those choices in the end.
Yeah, and I think I really love what you're saying, that the goal is to make the book as good as it can possibly be. It's not about punishing you. You know?
Right.
Oh, perfect, Amanda. Thank you so much. I just, I'm so thankful for every good editor I've ever had, and I've been very lucky. All my books are traditionally published, and I've always had editors who cared and saved me from embarrassing myself. So.
I do think most editors really do care. I'm sure that the horror stories have some legitimacy, but all the editors I've ever known really do care about the work and the authors.
Yeah, I agree. And it becomes kind of a passion for them as well as for us. So that's been really a lovely experience. So thank you, Amanda. Nick, once the manuscript is polished, I'm guessing this is where you come in. So tell us what happens next. How do you get it ready for publication?
Well, a lot of the work that I do, a lot of the work that I do can be done in parallel with the stuff that Jocelyn and Amanda are doing. So I start as early as possible in the process. Once Jocelyn has an idea for a book, you know, it goes into a spreadsheet that we keep. We have a schedule, it goes into the schedule. I start to think about, okay, well, when are we going to have the idea developed enough to start thinking about cover art? That's one of the first things that I start to think of, because it's important to get that sort of imagery in place about what the book's going to look like and what we're going to do to market it. So I can do a lot of the cover stuff up front while she's working on the story. And yeah, that's where I really start.
So why don't you start by giving us just like an overview of then kind of what your process is from cover art to marketing through layout and all of that, and then we'll go back and kind of go over each step, because I kind of need that big picture first so I don't get overwhelmed. So once Jocelyn has the idea, you kind of put together your spreadsheet with a schedule and you hire a cover artist and start the marketing.
Yeah.
What else happens? Oh, go ahead.
So I start searching for cover artists, and depending upon what the theme of the book is and what kind of look we're going for, I've sort of searched out a short list of people I think do really quality cover art, and so I kind of try to figure out which one might be the best fit and then communicate with them that I'm interested in getting a cover done. So the cover art is one step. The formatting and layout, that I all have templated at this point. When we first started about a year ago, it was a lot of work up front to sort of figure out how to do all the technical stuff of the file formats and what type of interior formatting we want for the layouts and all that kind of stuff. Now that we've done three or four six or seven of these, I have that all templated out. So now I can just pop the text in, do a few little tweaks if we want to make something look a little bit different for this release. So that's all in place. That doesn't really take a whole lot. And then it's a matter of, so once those two steps are done, then it's a matter of putting together all the marketing materials. So we have a lot of different things that we try to do, little things that we try to do for marketing. And marketing, I'm using that in broad terms. You know, there are all different little things that an independent, low-budget book production process can do to try to market. Some examples of those are, just trying to get the word out that the book is on the way, what the status is of the edits of the writing process, and Jocelyn does that through Facebook and Twitter mostly. But also doing things like just putting an example chapter in the back of the manuscript from another book that you think readers might be interested in. That'll help connect the work that you're doing right now with other things that you have or other things that are in the pipeline coming later. So little tricks like that, little marketing things that you can do that don't really cost you a lot except a little bit of time, but I think are truly effective. And so that's part of the process.
So after you do that kind of marketing stuff and you've done your formatting and layout, then the next step is to what? Send it to the printers, put it up as an ebook, put it into a special file. How does that work? Like, when does it get published?
Yeah, I don't know how far down in the process you want me to drill into, but basically, we've done mostly ebooks, but we also do some print-on-demand publishing for her novel-length books. So let me step back for a second and describe what print-on-demand is. Traditional publishers usually publish what's called offset printing, which is they take a whole bunch, or they make an order for a large number of copies, a print run, basically, and then they are able to do those all at one time, whereas we can't afford to store and distribute, 10,000 copies of our books, so we use print-on-demand services who will print up copies as they're ordered, so they print them basically one at a time. And there's a few different services out there that will do that. So if you want to go the print route and you're an independent person who is not selling thousands of copies, then print-on-demand is the most cost-effective solution. And then the other side of that is the e-publishing side, and there are a number of different publishing platforms that distribute e-books, from the big ones like Amazon and Barnes & Noble to smaller distribution sort of networks, like one that we use is the All Romance e-books for Jocelyn's alter ego as a romance author.
Wonderful.
So those are the types of channels that we work through. And I can answer any questions about those if people are more interested.
Yeah, well, let's back up a little. I think this is really overwhelming, so we're going to just go little by little by little. And
yeah.
I think, let's start with art direction and finding a cover artist. Do you have any recommendations for that? And is this something that we should do ourselves? Or is this something where we should really, pony up the big bucks, get someone to help us?
You know, the cliche is never judge a book by its cover, but the reason why that's cliche is because everybody always does. And I think it's true that it may be even more true now when you can browse through using the internet, hundreds of books in an hour. Having a cover that really strikes home with the audience is more critical than ever. And so I think if you're going to spend any money on the book at all, spend it on editing first.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to spend a little bit more on the book, I'm sure Amanda would love to hear that, but if you're going to spend a little bit more on the book, then spend it on the cover art, because I think that's the probably the second most important thing after getting the book text as good as it possibly can be. As far as art direction and finding a cover artist, it's really hard to find somebody with all of the skills needed, the layout, the actual artistic skills to make the image, the typography, the design, and all that. It's hard to find one person who has all those skills who can produce a really quality product. And so you're going to pay a decent sum of money. And my ballpark is for if you're using stock imagery, it's roughly about $500 to find a decent person to do an ebook cover, to do a full wrap for a full book. You're talking more like $700 or so. And then if you're doing original art, either illustrated or whatever, you can usually double that.
Oh, wow. So $1,400.
Yeah. So $1,000 to $1,400, depending upon all the details.
So I guess the next thing that I want to ask you about is this whole idea of book design and formatting. I can tell a self-published book in about 2 seconds by opening it up and seeing that there are no margins and it looks just messy, and I'm frustrated. And I've been really impressed by the books that your team has put out because they're so elegant inside. So clearly there's some artistry involved here. Maybe you can talk a little bit about book design and formatting and what tools are available.
Yeah. That's another tough area. My background in software development has really helped here in the ebook side, because ebooks are essentially, underneath the covers, they're essentially web pages. It's all HTML. The layout flows, so if you adjust the size on your e-reader, all the text will reformat for that. So it's all just like a big giant web page. So having a background in web development, doing that for about 10 years now, even more than that, I think that's been really helpful. And so I do everything by hand. I basically take all of her stuff, dump it into templates that are all coded by hand, and adjust things. But there are a number of different tools out there that are available. Some of the most popular ones are Scrivener, which writers can use to manage both the writing process and actually producing the formatted book. Microsoft Word, you can always do that, use that to do the layouts and then upload it. And that's probably where you're seeing a lot of those really crummy looking ebooks coming out. People just upload their Word documents and let Amazon have at it with their conversion programs.
Okay.
And then there are platforms like Smashwords that will help you through the whole process. You give them the manuscript and they have a bunch of scripts and software to help manage the process and help you through the process of publishing your book. So there are all different kinds of tools available and services available. And I can provide links or something to put into the follow-up.
That would be great.
That point to all these different tools that are used.
I just want to interrupt and let everybody know we're going to have questions in a few minutes. I still have a few more questions for Nick, so hang on. If you want to ask questions and don't want to talk, you can go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/rightnowcoach. I've got a place where you can, make a list. I put mastermind call starts in a few minutes. Share your questions for our guests in the comment section below. It's on the top of the page, so go ahead and share your questions there if you don't want to talk, which some of you, if you're in a cubicle, may not want to talk. So, Nick, talk a little bit about publishing and platforms. I know that you guys have done both print and ebooks. First, how do you decide between digital and print, and then what are the different platforms we need to know about?
Yeah, deciding between digital and print is a tough decision because the digital marketplace right now is growing extremely rapidly as e-readers become more accepted in the market. But it's still only, by some measures, about a quarter of the overall book sales. And so making that decision to go with ebooks is also limiting your audience. But we decided because the costs are so much lower in terms of getting the book produced, that we would begin with doing ebooks and then experiment with this print on demand model over time. And once we made that decision, we basically had to then decide what platforms we wanted to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by platforms is there are a number of different sort of ebook retailers out there in the marketplace. And so you have Amazon, which is by far the largest, and then you have the Barnes & Noble with their Nook platform. You have the Apple iBook Store for iPads and iPhones and things like that. And then you have the Kobo Bookstore, which is a Canadian startup who used to be part of the Borders enterprise, got spun off when Borders went away. And then you have a whole range of different sort of what I call specialty ebook stores, things like All Romance Ebooks. Sony has a bookstore. Diesel, the jeans company, I think they have a bookstore. There's all these different kind of niche specialty bookstores that you can decide to go into. And then the other one that's really big, that's reasonably big, and I always forget about because we're not actually on it, is Smashwords. Smashwords is both a publishing platform that'll help you publish the book and also an ebook retailer. And they also link to all of these other retailers. So if you publish on Smashwords, you can decide to have them publish also on all these other ebook platforms. Mm-hmm. But there are trade-offs involved there.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't think we have time to go into all those trade-offs right now. But if somebody has a question about them, I'm happy to ask or answer.
And, I want to open up to questions in just a minute or so. So, Nick, as we kind of wrap up your part, do you have one or two tips that you'd offer to our listeners about kind of your part of the process, the getting it ready to be published, publishing it, and marketing it? What's one or two things you'd have people think about?
Well, I think I actually want to step back at this point and say there are one or two things that I think are really important that anybody who's getting into this indie publishing process should really consider. And that, first of all, is be very patient. We went into this with the goal of it taking us 5 years to really figure it out and start making this work for us. So be very patient. You're not gonna be an instant hit in the marketplace, but just keep working at it and keep publishing. Build a backlist as much as you can. Keep publishing more titles. And once you're done with one, don't worry about it. It's out there. Go on and work on the next one. The second thing I would say is do what you're comfortable with. You don't need to be everywhere, especially with marketing. You don't have to be on Facebook. You don't have to run your own blog. You don't have to be on Twitter. Do whatever makes you most comfortable, what's going to be most authentic to communicate to your fans, and it won't eat into your writing time too much. And I guess finally I would say make sure to get your stuff professionally edited and proofread. So many times, like you mentioned at the start of this segment, you see these ebooks that they just look like garbage, and they're filled with typos and they're filled with poor grammar and all that other kind of stuff. They clearly have not gone through an editing process at all. Sometimes even traditionally published stuff can look like that. But you don't want your first impression with a new customer to be, oh my God, this is an interesting story, but I can't read it because it just drives me nuts because there's all these errors. So get your stuff proofread for sure.
That's helpful. Thank you, Nick. Yeah, what I like about this is kind of thinking about a book as a product and making it as useful of a product to your clientele as you can. And so just as, you know, a smartphone is only as useful as it can be worked, it's the same with the book. If you can't really access the book, if there's a barrier like spelling errors or formatting errors, then that's going to be hard for your readers. So I want to open it up to questions. If you're muted yourself, you can unmute yourself by pushing *7 and go ahead and ask questions. Please direct them to one of our three guests, Jocelyn the writer, Amanda the editor, and Nick the man who wears the rest of the hats. If you don't want to speak, you can always leave your question on my Right Now Coach page on Facebook, which is facebook.com/rightnowcoach. So anybody have any questions for our guests? And if you don't, I do. So, but I'd love to hear from you because I know a lot of you are excited for this call because you've got your own fiction or nonfiction projects that you're thinking of throwing out there into the marketplace. So who has a question for our guests?
I would like to support the Get It Edited teaching. I'm Beth Hoffman from Waukesha, Wisconsin, and I do some freelance proofreading and copy editing. And I read, and one series that I'm reading is by a number of different authors, and every book has suffered from not being proofread thoroughly. And some of the characteristics of the characters or the site change from book to book, and I think this shouldn't be. They're pretty books, and they're generally nice stories, but they have problems in presentation that have made me decide not to buy any more of them. And I'm sure the publisher doesn't want that to be the general response.
Thank you, Bess. I appreciate your interest in good language and having it make sense.
Thank you.
I think that brings up another good point, too, which is if you're going to have a series, you probably want to work with the same editor through the whole thing. Because otherwise, you know, you need somebody else who has their brain in the entire thing who can find inconsistencies across books and not just within the book.
I think that's really good advice. And I think, you know, that's true for nonfiction as well, because if you're a thought leader or some sort of a professional who's publishing a series of nonfiction books, no doubt you tend to repeat yourself, and having the same editor who can say, hey, honey, you wrote about this like in book one or book two, and now we're in book six, and people are going to get bored of hearing this, or you told this story already. You may not realize, and I had that experience. I took stories and I searched through my whole manuscript to make sure I didn't repeat the stories when I edited my book. So thank you. Great tip. Other questions? Either about the writing process, the editing process, or for Nick on some of the details of publishing and e-publishing and so forth.
Hi, I'm Rebecca from Virginia, and I have a question for Jocelyn.
Okay, go ahead.
Actually, I have two questions. First of all, I was wondering if you belong to a writer's group, and second, I was wondering if you could share in a little more detail what your writing day looks like. How do you structure your day so you get yourself in your chair every day?
Thanks, Rebecca. Go ahead, Jocelyn.
Yeah, those are both really good questions. I am a member of a writing group. I've been off and on a member. I've just joined another one a couple of months ago, actually. So I meet with other writers monthly, and I think that that's a really valuable experience. As with any group, you might need to do some searching before you find the right group for you. But it can be an incredibly valuable resource, not necessarily for critiquing and reading alone, but also to have people who are in your situation who can understand what you're going through and who can provide support and advice if they've experienced the same thing. So I am a member of a writing group, and I would definitely recommend it to other writers. For the second question, regarding my sort of writing day, it's something I'm still practicing. I have been getting better about it. My biggest issue is recognizing distractions and trying to eliminate them before they can ensnare me. So when I wake up, I try to avoid the internet as much as possible. I'll check my email to see if there's anything urgent that I actually need to respond to. But if there isn't, I will actually turn off my wireless and write as much as I can for 2 to 3 hours before I go back online. To me, that's the most important thing. If you have a job or if you have kids, if you have, you know, other commitments, you really need to sort of step back and see where you can fit in your writing time. And it's important to remember that you can always write something. Even if you have only 15 minutes a day or an hour a day, you can write down words that weren't there before. And the progress may seem agonizingly slow, but it's progress, and it's better than nothing. So I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Great. That's great, Jocelyn. Thank you. Other questions? And if you want to ask questions, go ahead.
Hi, this is Beth again. And I have been a absolutely by the grammar book kind of proofreader and editor. Recently, I received an email that said, among other things, don't fret who and whom. Don't fret more than instead of over. And so I'm asking the editor, which is more useful, the way people talk or the way we're supposed to write? Because these can be different, I think.
I think it depends on the tone of the book. For a lot of books, a conversational tone is really what they're going for. I edited a book by Chuck Wendig, and his style breaks every single grammar rule that there is. But as long as it's clear, that's really part of his style, and so I did not go through and fix all of that stuff. That's part of the experience of reading one of his books. Now, when Jocelyn's writing a Regency book, you walk a different line. It needs to feel a little more proper, or it's going to feel like it doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
If you're writing nonfiction, you probably want to follow a lot more of the rules, too. Because if you're not paying attention to the rules, maybe you didn't pay attention to the research either.
Amanda, can you define a Regency book for us if we're not familiar?
Jane Austen.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's perfect. Well, thank you, everybody, for your questions. We're going to have a follow-up email for you on Friday or Monday, depending on how fast my web person can get the recording up. But I want to end the call with some wisdom from each of our guests today. So I'd love to have a final piece of wisdom from each of you. Jocelyn, why don't we start with you?
Sure. I guess my wisdom in regarding writing is to maintain your own level of confidence. As a writer, there's so many sources of information now and so many people who know the right way to do something. And that might not be the right way for you. So as a writer, the most important thing that you can do is believe in what you're doing and keep writing. Don't allow yourself to become too mired in just too much advice or too many questions. And just keep plugging along, and when you can, get it to that beta reader, get it to your editor, and make it the product you want it to be. You're going to feel so much better when you have something that you can hold in your hands than just the novel you've been working on for 20 years.
That's great. Thank you. Amanda, do you have a final piece of wisdom for us?
Sure. So many things go through my mind. I think the biggest one is to trust your editor, to understand that if you have a good relationship with your editor, that the idea is that the editor stands in for all of your potential readers, and that no matter how much it hurts, if the editor sees a problem, it doesn't necessarily mean you should fix it that way, but that there are other readers out there who might have a similar problem.
Mm.
And so that's a good thing to at least pay attention to, even if you don't end up following the exact advice. But a good editor is your first interaction with all of your potential readers.
Yeah, like you could repeat that and we could all put that on our walls. Your editor, how did you put that? Is your first interaction with your potential readers. Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, Amanda. And Nicholas, your final piece of wisdom.
I would say so self-publishing is not an individual process. It's a process that should involve multiple people. As you can see here, we have three people that are involved at minimum, plus all the beta readers and whatnot. So self-publishing does not mean that you're doing everything yourself. You should get as many people involved as you can afford. Get friends and family involved as much as possible. And don't be discouraged if things don't work out immediately. Be patient.
Mm. I want to thank our guests today. This has been just such a rich call. Jocelyn Kaler, the author, Amanda Valentine, editor and blogger, and Nicholas Tulak, man who wears a lot of hats but works as the publisher. In this case, and I want to thank you for your rich content, and I want our listeners to know that I will be sending out an email later this week or early next week with a link to the recording and a link to Jocelyn's books and the resources that Jocelyn, Amanda, and Nicholas have talked about. Just a note on the Right Now Mastermind class, we're definitely taking July off. We may be taking August off. It depends on how much rest I want to get, but we'll definitely be back in September with lots of great guests and super information-rich classes. So thanks for being a part of it, and remember to always write. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.